Thank you so much for joining us, Jono.
Hi.
Now, first things first, how exactly did you and Heather first get into making music together as Cry Club?
Well, we met like quite a while ago, and I always was super aware of their like quite amazing ability to sing. And I was playing in bands at the time, and I was playing guitar for like a pop act that was like traveling around and stuff. And then when that wrapped up, I was like, I want to start another pop thing, or like another like post-punk thing maybe, because I played in a post-punk band when I was a teenager. Like, oh, maybe that.
Amazing.
And then I had all these demos and I sent them to Heather, and then they completely dodged them.
They were like, no.
They're like, I don't know how to do this. And it's like, and then it was like another year. And then I was like, I had a little bit more of a firm idea of what I really wanted to do. And then I was like, okay, you're going to come over to my house this time.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, their girlfriend at the time thought it was like, I don't know, it was like a weird thing. And they like she came along as well. And like we were writing a song and she was like in the corner playing Pokemon. which was great. But yeah, we had that like first day writing together, and I was like, oh, this is a thing. Let's just focus on this. So
yeah.
And we just kind of put everything we could into writing, and then about 3 or 4 months later, we played our first show, and then we kind of kicked off at what turned into a very busy year. We played 42-something shows
in
the first
year.
Yeah.
In the first year as well.
Yeah, we kind of hit the ground running.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, get it done.
Yeah, right? That's it. Like, if I'm not here to fuss around.
Exactly. I mean, you can say you're not here to fuck spiders.
I was like trying
okay,
to not
cuss.
Say it. Okay. You could see fuck spiders go across
like,
my eyes.
Like those fucking like cool like futuristic shades of like words on them.
Yeah, you saw that go past.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just that immediate thing of like we wrote our first song together, and I was like, okay, cool. Like, we're locking this down and we're focusing on this.
Amazing. So how exactly would you describe kind of the general creative process of you two?
I'm one of those people, like, I have that, like, beautiful combination of, like, my worst character traits are impatience and, overambition.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time working on stuff because I'm just like, well, I want to make it happen. So I spend a lot of time like writing the instrumentals for the songs because I come from playing in like I used to play in like a mathcore band, like Dillinger Escape Plan kind of vibe.
Cool.
I used to.
That rules.
I was like the touring guitarist with Beck Sandridge for a while.
Oh wow!
And I played in like a 12-piece gospel band. Like
you got all the genres down pat.
Yeah, I was like really obsessed for a while in being like a really like quality like session.
Yeah.
Musician who could like read music, sight read, play a bunch of instruments, all that sort of stuff. I was really obsessed with that for a while.
I watched a documentary on those session musicians and they're incredible.
Yeah, like there's just something really fantastic about people who have skilled up to the point where they can just like punch it out.
Yeah.
But now I'm in the spot where I'm like, okay, my own creative practice. So it's like I spend a lot of time like trying out different genre stuff, and then Heather and I sit in a room together and just go like, all right, let's figure out what the vocal is. Because especially when I'm in a room next to Heather, I am not a good singer. It's like, they could make anyone look bad. So it's like, I was born deaf. Like, my ability to pitch stuff isn't great. Like,
you were born deaf.
Like, I was, this is like life story stuff, but like, I was born in.
Put it in.
I was born in the car on the way to the hospital. My dad was like, it's not happening. And mum was like, it's happening. And and he was like, it's not. And then he went to the hospital that was further away because there was totally more time.
Oh, my God.
And then, like, I was born, like, literally 5 minutes away from the hospital.
Wow.
But because of that, I got, like, this ear infection that me as, like, a X amount of months old child wasn't able to communicate. Mother, father, I think I have an ear infection. Please take me to the doctor. It was more just like...
Owie, owie, me eerie.
It was more just me screaming. So all the photos of me as a child, it was, like, me wearing, like, a pink bike helmet because I used to like hit my head against the wall because it would distract me from the paint. Like, here's my like dark backstory. But all that, like, because I wasn't able to hear properly, I think my ability to hear pitch and all that sort of stuff kind of got affected.
Yeah.
Which is why a lot of the Cry Club stuff is like super fucked, like harmonically. Like if you pull your like theory hands out, you go like, oh, Robert Smith is completely atonal. Like,
well, I mean, like not to like humble, bit of a humble brag here, yeah. But I learned how to harmonize by ear.
Yeah.
At a young age, thanks to my dad singing Beatles songs with me in the car.
Totally.
But like, I mean, there's something about harmonies that like, you can have a perfect harmony, but then again, what the fuck is a perfect harmony?
Yeah.
And like, I think that there's very much a very independent charm in a harmony not being quite so perfect.
Yeah. It's, I think, a big part of my like developing my ear came through like, and this is gets into the nerdy stuff, but like the like impressionistic composery stuff. Like I'm like, I did like a degree at uni, like a music degree and an audio engineering degree, and that kind of like, keys don't matter, it's all fake.
It's not real.
It's a very like nihilistic approach to harmony, but it's just like that thing of like, I just follow my ear, and my ear's kind of dumb, so it takes me to interesting places.
But I mean, like, that's kind of amazing. Like not to furiously toot your horn, but like essentially being born deaf and then looking at you now, like you've got so much music experience and you're in, I like, and once again, not to toot the horn, you're in probably one of the biggest up and coming bands in Australia.
Yeah.
Like that, like what a story.
It's pretty good. Like there's a bunch of like, I feel like, cause I've been playing in bands for like 10 years or something. Mm. And I feel like a lot of the parts of Cry Club are just like interesting little tidbits. Like, I've been playing in bands for 10 years. This is Heather's first band.
Really? Oh my gosh.
Because they did all this, like, when they were in high school, they did all those like talent development, like all those like, try and make someone like a pop star kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
And
very different paths.
As they described it, they got kicked out because they got too fat and got a fringe. As they describe it, because they were the kid that was like, I want to sing My Chemical Romance, and
yep,
then everyone's just like, can you just like sing this like miscellaneous pop song of the day?
And they were like, no.
And they were like told like, you're not clever enough to write songs, all that sort of stuff. Like all this kind of intense stuff. And then it was just like, when we started working together, it was like, oh no, you can do it. Like,
You're good.
It's fine.
Oh
like,
my gosh.
So yeah, we've got all these like, we met on a plane. Like we didn't actually meet on Earth first. We met on a plane.
You meant off Earth
first. Yeah. Like we met on a plane to Japan, like this uni trip that we did together. We were sitting next to each other on the plane, and that's how we met.
I think that's a really good opening line for any future bio of Cry Club.
Oh, totally.
Cry Club did not meet on this earth.
Okay, next single, the PR for that.
We are aliens.
We are aliens. I feel like Heather would love that.
So, your debut single,
yes.
Walk Away. Such a powerful track that kind of really delved deep into, I guess, a feeling of anguish that many queer people face in their day-to-day life, but, you know, especially during the marriage plebiscite.
Yes.
So how do you think identity has kind of influenced how you guys create music?
Well, I think for us, in that kind of early stage of writing, when we were, like, before we were playing shows and all that sort of stuff, and we, like, had this is, like, the example of it, like, we would have like we'd write a song and then we'd have to like come up with like a working title. And there was like the series that was Angry Gay and Mad 1, Angry Gay and Mad 2, Angry Gay and Mad 3. So it was like a big part of it is like there's this weird little thing that happens with us where because we write lyrics and like all the vocal stuff is written together completely.
Yeah.
So it's like shared lyrics and all that sort of stuff. So it's like a shared autobiography that we have. Where it's like there was that day, for example, with Walk Away, where there was like this skywriting.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was working in a studio, and like in a studio, you don't see the outside world. No windows or anything. And then I walked outside, and it was like a day or two after the first bit of skywriting, and I saw a skywriter start again, and I was just like, oh, fuck this.
Just stop.
So, and like, it was obviously, there was just a bunch of things as well, like Heather's car, like they had like a rainbow flag sticker on it. At one point it got egged. Oh, like there was all this really intense stuff that was going on. And it was just like, this just sucks. Like, do we have to go through this? So it was like, it was just one of those like a deeply challenging times kind of for everyone.
Absolutely.
So it was, yeah, it's one of those ones where I'm like, now with a bit of distance, I can go like, okay, we got there.
Well, that's exactly, like, it's like, I mean, so many people, especially like straight people, are kind of like, well, you guys won, so aren't you happy? And it's like, did you see what we had to go through?
Yeah, did you see, like just even my friends, like, I had a friend, like, I live a life, I've realized recently, I live a life surrounded by lesbians.
Valid, yeah. Very valid.
All of my big, like, musical moments happened because of lesbians.
That's a perfect quote.
But, like, honestly, I realized it, like, a little while ago. I was like, oh, god damn it. How did this happen? Like, a friend of mine in Wollongong, she was like, even the people that are supportive kind of take a weird tone where it's like, I just want to walk my dog down the street with me missus and not have someone be like, oh, I voted yes, can I pat your dog? It's like, can you leave me alone? But just like
pat my dog if you didn't open?
It would have been fine. But like but I just love that. Like, I just want to walk down the street with me dog and me missus. I don't know.
It's good.
Yeah.
But it's bad, but like lines like that, me dog and me missus.
Yeah.
it's very good.
Well, it's a bummer seeing the pain that leads to normalcy.
Yeah,
with this
absolutely.
Stuff. Like the amount of effort and strain that goes into this is normal now.
Yeah.
You know? So that song for us was always like, when we were picking like what song to put out first, it was like that one was just like, we kind of should do that one because we really like it as a song, but also like it just says so much about who we want to express ourselves, because like our identity as a band, like as people, informs so much about the music we make.
Absolutely. And it's such a powerful song.
Oh, thank you.
Like it really is. I mean, like, personally, I think all of your songs are incredibly powerful.
Thank you so much.
So who would you say are some of your biggest musical inspirations? I think that maybe one of them might be relevant in a certain song of yours.
Ah, yeah. What an amazing segue.
Just a little bit of that.
Well, going into that, The Cure is like a massive one for Heather. I think Heather grew up like... their dad has that, like, I saw The Cure in 1980, you know, like, it, like, peak.
Yeah.
You know, and has seen them, like, 20 times or something intense. So it was, like, always, like, a discussion in the house of, like, which record was best. And, like, if you liked 17 Seconds, were you okay? Like, stuff like that, whereas, like, that I think that just imparted so much about their life. And I grew up like, because I didn't grow up in a house with music as a part of it, like it wasn't like the times when I was exposed to music was when I watched TV shows and played games and stuff. So when I started getting involved in music, one of the people that I played in a band with, he like big teased out hair, obsessed with the Horrors at the time, which takes you straight to The Cure. And
I mean, every dude with big teased hair loved the Horrors.
That's
a fact.
And that's you like sat back and that's it. A fact.
That's that on that.
I mean, they were kind of like the cool band of the time.
Yeah.
I think So like he was like obsessed with The Cure and I was like, oh, I wonder what it's like. And then because I'd always heard the really pop stuff. And then like the second I got near like the super gothy dark stuff, I was like, ooh, hello.
goth? Me?
Me walking into the building today wearing all black? What?
What? So is it true that you and Heather were originally planning to become The Cure cover band?
Well,
is that a fact?
What happened was, so I had been chasing down Heather to work on those initial batch of songs that I sent through.
Yeah.
I like sent through like six songs, like instrumentals, and I was like, can we work on this? And then like a year later, they'd posted on their like Facebook of like, who wants to start their like The Cure, Susie and the Banshees cover band? And I was like, motherfucker. Let's start a real band.
That's so good.
So that was like that moment. I was like, that was like a Facebook post. And then like every year when it rolls around, everyone's always like tagging us and we're like, oh my God.
Isn't this crazy? Now, so I mean, like with your most recent single, Robert Smith,
yeah.
It's fantastic. And I know that you two love The Cure. So I guess what was it exactly about, I guess, Robert Smith himself that inspired this, like, I guess, ode to his personal aura?
Well, for us, when we first had like the instruments of the song, we were like, oh my God, this sounds like Rage Against the Machine. Whoa, we should write a super political song. And then we spent like half a day writing the super political song and it sucked. It was really bad. And we were like, maybe we should just like, I don't know, let's just be dumb. Let's just be dumb with it. And we just have fun with it. And and then we just started talking about how, like, there was the beef between Robert Smith and Morrissey.
Oh, my God. Literally, that was, like, one of my like, bonus questions. Like, what's the deal with Morrissey?
Yeah. That's, like, the whole thing of the song was, like, about, like, who, like, if, like, there's you got those heroes that you see. And it's, like, something we're engaging with a lot in Australia at the moment, with seeing these acts who a lot of people are like, oh, my God, they're my hero. And then, like, 6 months later, turns out they're like, a piece of shit.
A horrible person.
Yeah.
Oh, your fave? Cancelled. Idiot. You're stupid.
Oh, it's just like, okay. There's just something really upsetting about, like, it's like I had, like, my friend's sweater curse.
Mm.
Them being from Brisbane, like, I had heard a lot about the Smith Street stuff
on the
download because I lived close enough. They lived in Brisbane. They didn't hear about it.
Yeah.
So then they were like, oh my God, Smith Street Band, they're going to play the Enmore Theatre. Whoa, for a band who's like starting out, that's amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
And then boom.
Yeah,
and then
happened.
Boom. And then they have to go like, why does everyone, like, it was a complete shock.
Brisbane's very far away. It is.
Well, that was
and
the thing.
Like, I know a fair few people from Brisbane who I like met through Tumblr that only knew about shit because they were on Tumblr.
Yeah.
And like, but even then, they're just like, oh, what's the big happening in Sydney?
What's
like,
happening?
What's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Brisbane's like kind of a bit out there, but that's the thing. And I guess with that kind of vibe, I guess in terms of like alternative music, Morrissey's kind of like the big one.
Well, that's it. He was like, he means so much to so many people.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, There Is a Light That Never Goes Out is like undoubtedly that song has probably like saved a handful of lives. Mm. Like that's so much of like the stuff of the Smiths means so much. Like I grew up watching Charmed.
Yeah.
And having How Soon Is Now open Charmed was like, oh my God, this is cool.
Well, that's the thing. So many people who loved The Cure probably like would say, yeah, The Queen Is Dead, one of my favorite albums.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
and
boom.
I grew up in that kind of like scouring Wikipedia and like best albums ever lists. And everyone was like, oh my God, Johnny Marr's the best guitarist. And I still rate Johnny Marr the guitarist because he wrote most of the stuff for the Smiths.
Yeah.
And then Morrissey would show up sometimes.
Yeah.
There's just this thing that happens when you find out the person that you were looking up to or like super keen on turns out to be an absolute piece of shit.
Oh, I was a huge Kevin Spacey fan
As was I. I have a distinct memory of being quite intoxicated watching House of Cards being like, this is like Shakespearean level. And it's just like, and then I'm like, oh, I just like get sober the next day and go like, oh, no, that was.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And then like the thing that's so upsetting about it is just knowing that people knew about it.
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly.
And they were like cool with it because he was just such a cool artist. And I'm like,
yeah.
Fuck.
Boo.
I'm just like
boo.
Just roll them out. Like
yeah.
Replace. Like there's enough good people in the world for the shit people who are good at their job to be phased out.
Yeah. When we think about it, there are simply just so many men. Mm. Period.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there's just so many. I was like, I live in a world of music and it's like horrifically dominated by men.
Yeah.
Like,
there's just so many.
Especially from like the engineering background. Like my job is as an audio engineer, and then just going around studios where it's like you spend all your time in rooms full of men.
Yeah. It's just guys being dudes.
Just guys being dudes.
What's better than this? What's better than this?
And it's like, and then going from like that in my work environment to then in my personal life, I'm just surrounded by lesbians.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
it's so different.
This is like a weird divide that's happening right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, moving on.
Yeah.
One of my personal favorite songs of yours is DFTM, yeah, otherwise known as Don't Fucking Touch Me,
yep,
which is a song that I think like kind of many people relate to,
yeah,
in terms of men simply not knowing how to act in public.
Yeah.
So what kind of spurred the idea to write this song?
I think when we were writing the song, I think we'd come in and we were like, I don't know whether or not it was like a specific moment that Heather kind of experienced at like a show or a gig, but I think in general, like when we first started out, we would just kind of play whatever show we could get on.
Yeah.
So it was like, let's just play as much as we can. Yeah, it'll be great. And then it reached a kind of point where we realized that we were playing with like a lot of like, Heather was like the only non-male person on the lineup.
Yeah.
And there's just an inherent sense of, like the safety isn't there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there was, like, if a weird experience does happen, well, there's, like, kind of, like, as much as I can be there to support Heather in that, like, being another dude in the army of other dudes, like, is, like, it's just not enough. So it's, like, when we wrote that, either, actually, a big thing was, like, Heather at the time was working in a haunted house, hilariously. But like in that, there's like when someone scares you and it's their job to scare you, sometimes people's fight or flight kicks, yep, into gear, and any sense of what's appropriate just jumps out the, yeah, window. And they just had a bunch of really shitty experiences.
Oh, absolutely.
One time they got like kicked in the chest by someone, like all this,
Jesus,
sort of stuff. Like, and it was just like, I think there was just like a growing sense of like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then when it came, like we like got up to the chorus, and then it was just like, and we were like, I think we were working on it, and then we got to the line, and then Heather was like, is that too like too forward, too blunt? And I was like, no,
that's great.
No, that's sometimes great. It's worth being blunt.
Literally put on my giant fucking Audio Technica, yeah, headphones and like walk down the street with that song blaring, and I look so angry. And then I've like talked to like a few other people, and they're like, yeah, but I do the exact same, yeah, thing. It's like one of those songs where it's just like, it's very relatable,
yeah,
but then also infuriating.
Well,
but in the best way.
That's the thing. I was like, it's when we put it out. Well, like when we first wrote it, we were like, oh, we're not sure about the song. And then everyone around us, when we started playing the song, they were like, no, that's kind of the song.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, okay. And then when putting it, like, the bummer about it is it shouldn't be the successful song.
Yeah.
Like, that's the, like, if you pull everything aside, it shouldn't be the song we care about. It shouldn't be the song that means stuff to people. Because,
yeah,
it shouldn't be something that
it's
has
so
to
relatable.
Mean something.
Yeah, absolutely.
It should be like the, oh, that song is too blunt. It is. It's kind of unrelatable in how, like, plain it is. But the fact that is relatable, like, is the thing that I think makes it, like, I don't want to say, like, a song I wrote is important, but, like, that it's something.
But it is. I'll say it for you.
Yeah, like,
that song you wrote, it's important. It is.
But, like, the fact that it is important to a lot of people, like, I feel really grateful that I can be part of something that puts that out into the world, but also like deeply frustrated that it is so universally felt.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah. And that song was like the moment where we were like shifting up a gear in terms of like figuring out who we were, like, musically as well.
Mm.
So going, like, the production, like, Walk Away was, like, the people I knew in Sydney going, like, oh, yeah, let's do this, like, punk thing. And it's going to be pop because Heather sings on it, and that makes it, that takes it in the pop world. And then the last year working with Gab Strum, Japanese Wallpaper, as a yeah. producer. So it's, like, mostly done on my end, and then we take it to Gab, and he wakes up in the morning, he loves pop music. He goes to bed loving pop music. So having someone like that who can balance my noise
yeah.
tendencies and just kind of, like, rein everything in.
Yeah. To, I mean, he, like, brought out Glow last yeah. year. Such a good album.
Yeah,
a
really oh. stunning.
Yeah. yeah. So speaking of... I was trying to do a good segue there. I'm not sure if
let's,
it...
Let's well, just roll it.
Speaking of new music, the yeah. Japanese Wallpaper brought out. Do you have any new music yeah. plans for 2020?
Well, I think it's a weird one because, like, I want to be able to say, like, yeah, we're doing this. Oh, my God, here's the plan. But, like, unfortunately, we're in a world where we need to keep some of those things secret.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is a bummer. But the world where we're at is we'll probably have something out pretty soon.
Amazing.
Definitely in this quarter, let's say.
Yeah.
But then also this is the big year
yeah.
for us.
Oh, yeah. Because so, you've got your upcoming tour.
Well, we got the tour, but in terms of releases,
oh.
I'll say it's oh. the big year.
Oh, exciting.
So, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
But Bea, speaking of your tour,
yeah.
You've got that coming up.
Yeah.
You've got kind of your supports on the tour, like a mixture of musicians and drag queens.
Yeah.
Could you be able to tell us a little about them,
yeah.
why you chose them?
Totally. So when we were talking about the things that we wanted to do this year, a big thing that we wanted to get out of was we noticed that a lot of the people that would come to our shows weren't necessarily people that would always go see bands.
Yeah.
We, some part, a good chunk of our audience is not necessarily like gig rats who always go to gigs. They're just like maybe like more Twitter people,
yeah.
Instagram people who are like, oh, cool. I saw, you know, this band aligns with me, so I'll go see them. And it'll be the band I see this 6 months
yeah.
or 3 months. And we were like, okay, for people like that, how do you make a gig environment interesting? And having three guitar bands in a row, all thinking they're like, you know, XYZ things.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of gets a bit old.
Fair.
By the time
valid.
You get to the last band. So, like, the amount of times I've gone to shows where it's like, oh, yeah, keen for the headline act, and I'll get there to see the supports because the support's great. And then I see the supports and they're kind of like the main act.
Yeah, it's like we chose these bands because they're just like us.
They sound like us, but they maybe haven't had as much time around the block, so their songs aren't quite as like together. Or maybe the support act is more together.
Oh, that's
that happens sometimes. Yeah. Like where the support act is absolutely killing it, and then you get to the headline act, the act that you spent the money to see, and you're kind of done.
It's like, this was great. Bye.
Bye. Like, I've been that person so many times. Like, even seeing my favorite band, the second it goes past half an hour and then an hour, I'm like, I want to tap out.
Yeah.
Like,
valid.
I'm just done.
Oh, I'm very much in the boat of, I'm really happy that people are excited about the Lockout Lords going away, but I'm in the small boat of just keep Sydney closed. I want to go to bed.
At a reasonable hour,
yeah.
right? Yeah.
Oh, things are open till 5 now? Well, I'm out by 12.
Yeah. Me too.
And out meaning out cold. Like,
yeah.
I'm asleep.
Yeah. So it's like, when we were like booking everything, we were like, how do we make it not just three guitar bands? So
yeah.
in each spot we were able to pick, specifically in like the main cities and stuff, we picked like our, like the, have the support act be friends.
Yeah.
Like have it friends and then have, drag performers around it because
yeah.
it was, I don't know, we've been seeing a lot of like cool drag stuff down in Melbourne, and it was, we've got a lot of friends through like Heather's theatre because they studied theatre at uni, and a lot of their friends are like queer performers who like do drag in different ways and all that sort
yeah.
of stuff, and it was it was just an opportunity we saw to make it not just the rock show.
Yeah, you know, yeah, like,
It's a really interesting way as well to like put a stake in the ground as well to go like, you know, we want to do something different.
Absolutely.
We want to be the band that's kind of not just doing, well, here's what a band does. Well,
this is band stuff.
Well, if you want to be a successful band, here's what you do. And it's like, well, we're not really interested in that. We're kind of interested in being kind of expressing ourselves and figuring out who we are to the best of our ability. And having drag performers on the show is like, I know there's a lot of back and forth in the queer community about drag queens and their place in it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who have a lot of weird feelings about it, especially because most people's exposure to drag is through RuPaul's Drag Race.
Right, yeah.
A RuPaul known...
Poo-poo guy. Stinky. Yeah.
So that a lot of people's exposure to it is through that, which kind of sucks. So not saying that we're kind of like going up against RuPaul or trying to change, like
you
do
are.
This big change thing.
But it's but just...
But I don't know, it's just a nice thing that we can do.
Absolutely.
And bringing just as much as it's like people who would be like not going to gigs as much and they'd be like, oh, wow, a drag queen. Yeah, that's exciting. That's a thing that happens at shows at things. As much as that can happen, the people who are band people as well who would be going to see a million gigs, have any of them seen a drag queen before in like real life?
Maybe not. Yeah.
So... that was, like, a big thing of, like, this year we want to, like, change the way, like, especially, this is, like, our first time ever doing, like, ticketed shows.
Yeah, right.
So it's, like, a good way to go, like, here's who we are. We want to do different stuff. So it's, like, this time we'll have, like, we're bringing drag queens around as much as we can. Next time, maybe we're the only band that has a guitar in it. You know, stuff like that, where we can just be like, let's just do different stuff.
Yeah.
And
bring in Kenny G, just like one saxophonist.
Yeah.
I learned the other day that it's pronounced saxophonist. I had no clue.
But, hey, Ruby.
Yeah.
How are you pronouncing it before that?
Saxophonist. It was really bad. And I was just like, I mean, and the worst thing of all, I used to play saxophone.
And you described yourself as a saxophonist.
Saxophonist, which makes sense. It makes so much sense.
I mean, it makes sense after the fact.
Yeah.
When you know.
Yep, definitely.
But yeah.
But yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah. So last but certainly not least, who are some of your favourite queer musicians?
So I'll step in. Like, Heather unfortunately can't be here, but I'll...
Shouts out to Heather.
They were aware of the name.
Yeah.
But hadn't really listened to the music of Dorian Lectra.
Yep.
And I showed them literally like 5 days ago, like some Dorian Lectra music videos, and they have not stopped talking about those. So it was like the idea of it being like a non-binary performer who is actively fucking with gender.
Yeah.
In the music videos, in really...
in their music as well.
Yeah.
Like man-to-man.
Man-to-man.
What a track.
The voice pitching.
Yeah.
I think is like so deeply interesting. Like the use of like auto-tune and all that sort of stuff to like shift their voice around.
Yeah. In a way that would like represent like... I guess what we consider like a masculine voice and a feminine voice. It's quite amazing.
And being able to use the technology to simultaneously present both stereotypes.
Yeah.
Is amazing. And the idea that a bunch of it's produced by Dylan Brady from 100 Gex.
Yeah.
Heather, I think 100 Gex was like Heather's like a band of last year.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, they were obsessed. So I think just being in like them finding out about Dorian... it was just like, I think it's just like a little bit of a come to Jesus moment of like, oh my God, this is what it is. But then for me, I have been for the longest time since the first record, but Baths.
Yeah.
I'm just obsessed.
Oh, fair.
And I'm in like the middle of another Baths phase where I listen to all the records on repeat again. Like I remember my first car that I had the first Baths record and that single Aminals.
Yeah,
it has all this like cool sampling stuff in it, and I just remember like pumping the crap out of that in my old, like my first car that I had. So I have like such a deep memory of that. And then he was in town just recently.
Yeah, that's very true.
And yeah, I just, I'm obsessed with everything Baths.
Yeah.
I think he's just stunning.
Yeah. Last year was my year of, the horns coming out again to toot.
Yeah.
But was, I listened to Cry Club like a lot. But Girl in Red as well.
Of course.
Was kind of like a standout artist of last year.
Yeah.
And also 2018, especially in terms of like kind of making very lesbian-centric music. You know, it's just like, I love women. And it's like, oh.
I mean, with that, King Princess.
Oh, King Princess. Oh, yes.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Like.
Oh, yes. Cheap Queen was a very good album
like,
of last year.
Ooh. Just, like, astonishing.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff.
Well, Jono, thank you so, so much for joining us on the show.
No, thank you so much for having us.
It's been really great having you.